Not that Matrix's detention centers were pleasant either, but at least there my sense of worth wasn't constantly being affronted, and I wasn't under so much stress.
"Okay, well, I won't keep you," he said. "I'll check in with both of you again soon."
With that, he hung up. My eyes turned to Lee in confusion.
"What was that about?" I asked.
"Wanted to verify for himself we're both still on the job," Lee replied. "Make sure I hadn't lost you." He opened the front door, and we strode out into the night.
"Anyway, I think you should start focusing now," Lee said as we donned our helmets and climbed onto his motorcycle. "Visualize what you need to accomplish tonight in your head."
Lee drove me through the tail end of rush hour traffic to the outskirts of town, suburbs to the south that were noticeably rougher than the city or any other areas I'd passed so far. The streets were not as well cleaned, the buildings shabbier, and the men roaming around looked generally more unkempt. I was still unable to spot a single woman amidst them. Lee parked the motorcycle in a bay on the sidewalk opposite a tall, round building, the first two floors of which were occupied by a noisy, smoky eatery. He led me across the road and around the side of the building where we stopped outside a set of open, peeling, red, double doors. I poked my head through to find a stairwell leading downward.
"The arena is through there," Lee whispered.
He backed up against the wall of the building and glanced nervously to the left and right.
"As you can see from the ticket, we're a bit early. Not a problem, though. Just go through those doors and show your ticket."
"What time will you come to pick me up?" I asked.
"V goes up first, and his fights rarely go past one round. Let's say, giving time for any possible delays, 11.
"That late?"
"Well, you shouldn't just leave straight after Vigo's fight. It's considered discourteous, and you might draw unwanted attention to yourself."
"Okay," I said. "Where exactly will I meet you?"
"Where I've left my motorcycle now," he replied. "I'll be hovering somewhere in that area and watching for you."
I nodded again, my palms and forehead breaking out in a sweat.
"What happens if I get caught?" I asked. "You've just got to make sure you don't."
"Great." Lee lingered for a minute longer, readjusting my fake hair, which had gotten disheveled after the motorcycle ride. My eyes still felt irritated, but since he didn't remark on them, I assumed they didn't look too odd. I doubted teary eyes was a great look for a Patreon man. Drawing in a deep breath, Lee took half a step back and gave my left shoulder a reassuring squeeze, then turned and headed back to the main road. I didn't wait to watch him disappear from view. I hurried through the double doors and down the staircase. I had work to do. The door awaiting me at the bottom was open and unguarded. Stepping inside, I found myself surrounded by an arena that was smaller than I had expected. It could probably fit about 300 people, which wasn't exactly tiny, but not grand like I had imagined the venue of a national sport would be. Not much pride had been taken in the aesthetics, either. The seats were made of garish red plastic, and the walls and ceilings were rough and unpainted, the brickwork clearly visible. But maybe this was all intentional? I suppose that it added to the atmosphere. I turned my mind back to the conversation I had overheard with Lee's colleagues, when they had been excitedly talking about a fight that was to take place in a few days' time. I couldn't remember the name of the arena where it would take place, but it had been Brunswick. I was sure of that. Maybe Vigo's career hadn't taken him to the big leagues. In the center of the room was a cage in the shape of an octagon. It had two entrances, and the mesh walls were constructed from thin, malleable metal, and the edges of the cage's floor itself looked painfully sharp. Their ridges were pointed. If someone slipped against them with the right amount of force, they could easily cause serious damage, probably even hospitalize someone. I guessed this was deliberate, though, making their environment as rough and treacherous as possible to up the stakes and keep the men on their feet at all costs.
I roamed around the arena, mulling over my task, until voices came from the door near one of the back rows of seats. Two men strode into the arena, carrying lighting equipment and two small foldable tables. I moved back into the shadows and took a seat, trying to remain as inconspicuous as possible while they set up the lights. They unfolded the tables in front of each of the entrances. Then more men came in with more paraphernalia. Some carried chairs and boxes of food, while others carried towels and first aid equipment. Finally, I spotted something interesting. A man carrying in two containers of water. He set one down on the tables at either entrance, where two flasks had already been placed. More banging and commotion ensued while they rigged up all the final lights, and then everyone retreated through the back door. I wondered if anyone had noticed me at all yet, and whether they'd just chosen to ignore me. Either worked for me. The main thing was that the room had become empty again. This was my window of opportunity, a window I had to grab with both hands now that the fight was drawing so close. I left my seat and made a beeline for the nearest cage entrance. The flask on this side was helpfully labeled with the name of Vigo's opponent. I sped around the cage to Vigo's side, glancing over my shoulder. I hurriedly opened the flask. It was already filled to the brim. I retrieved the foil ball and unfurled it, dropping the transparent gel capsule into the water. It blended in so well that I had to make an effort to search for it. It floated on the surface, too, which meant he'd likely swallow it in his first or second gulp. Footsteps sounded in the stairwell. Replacing the lid, I jerked back from the table and resumed my seat. I exhaled slowly, wiping my palms against my pants. Okay, it's done. The worst is over. Now, hopefully, all I had to do was wait. 20 minutes before the fight seemed to be the magic time of arrival. The arena began filling quickly, and within a matter of 15 minutes, every single seat had been taken, leaving many forced to stand. With 5 minutes to go, the main doors were closed. The excitement in the room was palpable, and I was surprised to see many women accompanying their husbands. Dressed to the nines in front of me sat three of them in a row, sandwiched by their husbands. In between flicking their perfectly coiffed hair, they were gushing about the fight that everybody else seemed to be so breathless about. Croft versus Vanguard. In spite of my nerves, I couldn't deny that I was excited, too. Attending this event was unique, an adventure, something I'd never imagined myself doing in my whole life. I suspected this would be the high point of my stay here in Petrus, so I probably ought to make the most of it. The lights dimmed, leaving a single spotlight to blast down in the far right corner of the room. Boos erupted as a tall, sculpted man stepped out, bare from the waist upward. He was bald, and every visible inch of his bulging physique was etched with green ink tattoos. His face reminded me of a shark's, angular, with a broad, flat nose and a cruel, crooked mouth. Wearing yellow shorts trimmed with gold, Seamus Sharp Vanguard made his way to his entrance and climbed into the cage. He skipped around the enclosure, bowing in four directions while gnashing his teeth and beating his chest, before retreating into his corner. Then the spotlight sped to the far left corner of the arena. Cheers erupted before Vigo even came into view. When he did emerge beneath the glaring beam, the crowd went wild. "There he is!" gasped one of the women in front of me through the deafening applause. He wasn't introduced with a nickname like Seamus, just Vigo Croft. Vigo looked quite different in his role as a fighter. His hair was tied back, revealing the full breadth of his jawline. His physique was muscled, but in a more understated and, in my opinion, very attractive way compared to his opponent. Although their weight must be even, Vigo was taller, leaner, and I suspected more agile. His knuckles were tightly bound in bandages, and his shorts were plain black. I found my butt sliding to the edge of my seat as he prowled down his aisle and swept into the cage. He didn't offer the audience any introductory performance like Seamus had. He simply planted himself immediately in his corner. A man sporting a blue shirt and white gloves moved to the center of the cage and beckoned both fighters forward. After he informed them that they were to obey his commands without exception, a bell rang. The commencement of the fight was announced by the booming voice of a man whom I was sure must have popped a deep vox pill or two. Nobody's voice is that deep. The two men circled for a few seconds before Vigo drew in. He aimed a front kick at Seamus's chest, causing him to stagger toward the edge of the cage. Seamus, trying to regain a central position, threw a flurry of punches, but Vigo blocked them deftly before counteracting with a powerful right hook that knocked Seamus to the floor. The crowd erupted.
"He's got the takedown!"
one of the women in front of me squealed. Vigo pounced on the man before he could rise, pinning him down and raining punches. Seamus held up his elbow, attempting to block them, but Vigo was too overpowering. He came in with blows not only to the side of Seamus's face and ears, but also against his kidneys. Seamus, daring to come out of pure defense mode, shot up a punch toward Vigo's face. But that only opened himself up. Vigo hammered down a punch so hard I found myself wincing. And the next thing I knew, Seamus had gone still and the referee was calling a stop to the fight. My eardrums ached from the cheers. Vigo rose to his feet. Although he had won, there wasn't the slightest trace of victory in his expression. He barely even made eye contact with the crowd. He looked uncomfortable, forced into the situation. I knew that feeling. Everybody stood and clapped. Whistles ricocheted around the arena. I watched with bated breath as he was handed his flask by a man in a black shirt. He swallowed a few mouthfuls before handing it back. That should have been enough for the capsule to glide down. I guessed Lee would know soon enough. Vigo didn't hang around to soak up the adoration. As soon as the referee announced him as the official winner, he swept out of the cage as swiftly as he had arrived, strode down the aisle, and exited the basement. As everyone settled back down to wait for the next fight, I tuned into the conversation the women in front of me were having.
"When is that guy going to move on to bigger things?" a blonde was saying. "He doesn't belong in this dump. Such a waste of talent."
"He's been approached by the big league a bunch of times already, Vanessa," a man, presumably her husband, replied. "He turns down their offers again and again. He doesn't want a bigger spotlight."
"He's twice the man most big league fighters are," a brunette chimed in. "Cruz, Rosen, Croft would knock them out. He'd be top of his division."
She shook her head sadly.
"He'll fade away if he doesn't move up in this game."
"Maybe that's what he wants," a second man retorted. "Whatever he's doing this for, it's clearly not legacy."
The conversation died down as the next fight was announced. The lights dimmed, and once again, the spotlight shone on the far right corner of the arena. This was to be a middleweight fight. Terrence Trump Wilson versus Bernard the Beast Hill. As the two opponents made their way to the ring one after the other, I was shocked to see a huge chunk of the audience get up and leave the arena. They really had just come to see Vigo. Only they weren't adhering to the etiquette Lee had advised me to follow. I understood why so many left. Professional fighting was still a complete novelty for me, but even I found the second fight slow and plodding. Neither had the skill or agility of Vigo to make it an interesting match. It went on for 5 rounds, and by the time the winner was announced, 3/4 of the arena had left. I felt bad for the fighters as they bowed and clapped harder in a feeble attempt to make up for the lack of noise. But those women were right. Vigo didn't belong here. I checked my watch. Lee was due to collect me in 10 minutes. I made my way to the exit before the next pair of fighters could enter the room,
and climbed up the stairs out into the open air. I headed to the main road and crossed to wait by the bay to make it easy for Lee to spot me when he arrived. After a couple of minutes, a familiar figure exited the bustling eatery. Draped in a long trench coat, hood pulled up over his head to shadow his eyes, Vigo was carrying a bottle of water and a bulging paper bag. I realized he was heading right for me, or rather, the motorcycle bay, and I moved discreetly backward, trying not to stare as he approached a beetle-black motorcycle. He seemed too intent on leaving the arena to even notice me standing nearby. A part of me was tempted to congratulate him for the fight, just for the hell of it, but I bit my tongue. Of course, that would be a stupidly unnecessary thing to do. He stowed his items beneath the seat, swung himself onto it, and roared away down the road in the direction of the mountains. When Lee arrived at 11 on the dot and asked if I'd placed the capsule, there was a lump in my throat as I replied, "I did." Chapter 15. After I gave Lee details on how I'd planted the tracker, he asked, "So, how was the fight?" I couldn't deny that I had enjoyed it. It was good. But I didn't feel good about what we were doing, in spite of Lee's assurance that we were doing nothing wrong, that we were simply retrieving a stolen object. But Vigo hadn't stolen it. He was just a foot soldier, someone just trying to survive, like me. I wished that the banquet was sooner, not only so I could see my brother sooner, but so that I would not have to carry around my guilt for so long. I realized that was the only way I could get through this would be to stop thinking about what I was doing. Adopt tunnel vision. Do everything required to ensure things ran smoothly so that I could get out of here, see my brother, and then, assuming I couldn't wrangle a way to stick with him permanently, reintegrate myself into some form of existence back in Matris and try to move on with my life. I'd probably look to move somewhere far away from everybody, like Vigo had done, to reduce the odds of getting into trouble again. Numbing myself shouldn't be too much of a challenge. My years spent in detention facilities had made me good at that. Blinders on, head down, same routine, day in and day out. Just get through the day. I had to see this mission involving Vigo Croft like everything else. Threading needles, sifting flour, or shoveling crap. This was all simply another detention, where I had no choice but to do as I was told. Once I adopted this mindset and stopped considering consequences, I felt lighter, and I was better able to engage in Lee's conversation. "Vigo knocked out the other guy in the first round," I told him. "Yup," Lee smirked. "No surprise there." I wish that professional fighting was a thing in Matris. If it had been, I might not have ended up in so much trouble with the law. I'd have had other ways to let off steam. "If I were a man," I muttered, "that's what I would be doing." This was probably the first time I'd ever truly considered what it would be like to be a man. "Fighting? It's not all it's cracked up to be," Lee said. "It's a hard, hard life." "Yeah, well, life is hard whatever you do." Reaching the foothills, we let the quieter atmosphere halt our conversation. The gentle mountain winds, the fragrance of the soil at the end of a warm day. Samuel was asleep when we returned to the house. We headed immediately to Lee's bedroom and drew up chairs at his desk. He switched on the monitor and pulled up a detailed map of Patris. Roaming it, I spotted four flashing red dots. They were all stationed near the city center. "You're tracking other people, too?" I asked. "Yes," he replied. "There are a few whose help I've needed, and I've had to keep an eye on them." "There's Vigo," he said excitedly. He pointed to a red dot that I hadn't even noticed yet. It was up in the mountains, some distance away from Lee's home. While we were situated on the southwest side of the palace, he was northwest. It seemed that he had already reached his home by now, as his dot appeared stationary. "So," Lee said, leaning back in his chair, looking relieved, I reached up to peel off my mustache.
Step one is complete, he said.
You successfully tagged him, and we can now monitor his movements in real time.
Next, I suppose we'll need to figure out his schedule, I muttered, pulling off my wig and removing the rest of my scratchy facial hair.
I agree. We need to know what, if anything, he plans to do on the night of the banquet.
This should be easier than what you did tonight. Vigo has little time to vary his schedule. When he is not working as a warden, he's typically either fighting or preparing for a fight. He trains at a gym in the city, and behind the reception desk is a schedule of all the booked sessions, as well as each of the members' upcoming fights. You'll likely need to hang around for a bit and wait until the receptionist goes for lunch, but the arrangement would be similar to tonight. I'll drop you there and give you about half an hour. I'm sure within this time you'll find an opportunity. There's usually only one receptionist behind the desk, and since we'll be arriving just before lunch, he'll have to take at least a short break to fetch his meal. We'll do it tomorrow. Leave here at 11:30 in the morning. Okay?
Okay. Another risk for me. But I understood why. Lee was more valuable than me in Matrix's eyes. I sat with Lee a little longer, staring at the map and watching the red dot that was Vigo. Then I left his room and headed to my own. Entering my bathroom, I removed the suit, took a quick shower, and changed into my night clothes before climbing into bed. As I drifted off to sleep, I returned to the Brunswick Arena. The electrifying atmosphere flooded my mind. The bright lights, the roaring of the crowd, the mass celebration of physical prowess. That night, it was me in the cage instead of Vigo. And opposite me, a stocky blonde female inked with green tattoos, whose face uncannily resembled a shark.
Chapter 16. I decided to wear the full-body suit for this lunchtime's excursion to Vigo's gym. Since I would be roaming in the daytime rather than lurking anonymously at the back of a shady arena, I figured that I would feel less nervous with it on. Lee donated 3 outfits to me, jackets, shirts, and pants, and I spent the morning tailoring them so that they would fit me properly. I pulled the pants ends up by a few inches before adjusting the jacket and shirts. My time working in the textiles factory had been useful after all. As for my shoes, I decided to wear my own again, the same as last night. They were kind of scrappy, but they'd do. I also took 4 Deepvox tablets 2 hours before we were due to leave. By 11:30, I was ready to leave. My voice had sunk deeper than the night before. Not fight announcer deep, but deep enough to pass as a real man. I couldn't stomach a lot of brunch, and it seemed neither could Lee. He was just as nervous as me. Lee headed upstairs briefly to check on Vigo's location, and returned to report that Vigo was near the palace, as expected. He also placed a small rectangular object in my hand, and a miniature notepad and pen in my pocket. I stared at the red object, turning it over in my palm. On one side was a blank screen. It's an advanced pager, smaller and less conspicuous than a phone. It will vibrate when I trigger it. He drew out an identical red object from his right pocket. And a message will pop up on that screen. You can also send a message to me if you need to. As for the notepad, use it to note down the dates. So, are you ready?
I nodded.
Then let's go.
The gym was fancier than I'd expected it to be. It was a stylish, steel structure spanning 4 floors, perched right on the bank of Crescent River. Lee dropped me off 1 street away.
I'll be back in about 45 minutes, but I'll send you a message when I arrive.
Okay.
I strolled casually across the road, keeping my eyes firmly focused on the ground. Reaching the building, the glass doors opened automatically and I stepped into a cool reception room with slate-tiled walls and black marble floors. A misty hue hung in the air. I dared to raise my eyes and gaze around the room. To my pleasant surprise, it was empty. Perhaps it was lunch break already. This meant I had to be fast. I had no idea when the receptionist would return. Withdrawing the notepad, I planted it down on the table while leaning over and scanning the desk for the big ledger Lee had spoken of. It was one of the first things I spotted, just to the left of me. I reached down a hand and lifted it up before paging through it. Indeed, Vigo's schedule had been marked there, and it was a busy one. His heart might not be in the fighting, but nobody could fault him for his dedication to the sport. I kept a keen ear out for sounds of the receptionist returning, but I had time to flip through the schedule a second time to be doubly sure that I had not missed any pertinent dates or times. He wasn't booked in for anything on the night of the banquet. That was the day we were most concerned about. I replaced the ledger on the table, careful to reposition it exactly how it was, and ambled away from the desk. Glancing up at a clock that hung above the main entrance, I still had loads of time. Only 5 minutes had passed. Not wanting to hang around in the reception area, where I would likely have to engage with the receptionist when he returned, I took off down the corridor to my left, deciding to explore the gym a bit. There were no signs indicating special permission was required, and the doors at the end of the corridor leading deeper into the gym were wide open, so I assumed that nobody would object. The corridor's walls were made of glass, allowing me to peel into hall after hall of cages as I walked. Each hall contained 2 or 3 cages, and the walls were lined with lockers and benches. I stopped at the 5th hall, where 2 fighters were going at each other in a cage. I watched as they grappled on the floor, each trying to wrestle the other into a chokehold. The loser eventually tapped the floor, and his opponent released him. I continued exploring, passing more halls, until I reached the end of the building. I stopped and turned around, but wasn't willing to retrace my steps to the reception so soon. I didn't want to return there until I had to leave the building. I entered an empty hall. I was better off sitting in here and waiting, rather than roaming around where I was more likely to run into trouble. I moved to one of the benches closest to the back wall and sat down. My eyes traveled all around the room, taking in every detail with interest. There was a line of punching bags hanging from a thick metal rack on the opposite end of the room. Another 10 minutes passed as I waited for Lee's message. Retrieving the pager from my pocket, I punched in a message and sent it to him. Just 2 words. "I'm done." It took him about a minute to reply. "Okay, stay where you are. I had to head to another part of town. I'll be there ASAP. I sat back on the bench, blowing out a breath. I was not great at waiting. My eyes returned to the punching bags. Slowly, I stood up and made my way over to them. Balling my fists, I landed my first punch against one. It was heavy, barely budging. The outer fabric was also rough, as though specifically designed to cause calluses and hardened skin. Glancing around the room again to check that nobody had entered without my noticing, I landed a harder punch in the center of the bag, causing it to swing away from me before swinging back. I punched again, and then again. My knuckles weren't used to this abrasion, and they were already feeling sore, but it was in a therapeutic way. I continued punching, though when I sensed my skin was about to break, I switched to kicking. Luckily, the clothes I was wearing were not too tight. I removed the jacket since it was making me hot and stuffy, and began attacking the bag with kicks. Back kicks, front kicks, side kicks. I practiced everything I remembered from Ms. Dale's training sessions. It felt good, really good, to awaken muscles I'd forgotten about, feel the stretch, the burn in my thighs as I pushed myself harder. Although I did keep an ear out for the sound of the pager vibrating in my jacket pocket, I got carried away and stopped checking the entrance to the hall as often as I should have. When I glanced up a few minutes later, it was to see a couple of fighters had entered and were heading my way. I stopped kicking, turning to face them, suddenly extremely conscious of the fact that I had discarded my jacket. I felt grateful I had worn the bodysuit. The fighters, I soon realized, weren't heading for me anyway. They merely glanced my way briefly before climbing inside a cage, much like I'd seen at the Brunswick Arena. Strapping fingerless gloves around their fists, they began to fight.
They didn't seem to mind my presence, so I refocused my attention on the punching bag and continued. When the pager finally went off another 10 minutes later, I was expecting it to be a message from Lee, telling me to hurry outside and meet him on the street. But instead, he'd sent a message informing me that, "There's been a delay. We'll be at least another 30 minutes. Sorry. Keep yourself out of trouble." I wondered what had happened and hoped nothing had gone wrong. I returned to my kicking, albeit with less focus than before. I got distracted by the fight going on to my left and kept glancing their way. I found myself predicting who would win, even though they had barely started. I figured it would be the shorter one. The man with a mop of ginger hair who was showing more initiative and daring than the other. As the sparring went on, I became more and more sure of my prediction. And then the ginger managed to trip the other up and pinned his arms behind his back, holding him until he grunted in defeat. I tried to keep myself looking busy. I didn't want them to think that my attention was on them, and the last thing I wanted was them watching me. I was dressed very differently to them, but at least the clothes I was wearing today were casual. The shirt was loose, as were the pants. After 5 more minutes of sparring, there was an audible yelp. I could have sworn that I heard the crack of bone. The ginger had injured his friend during a particularly frenzied takedown. The friend's right ankle looked bent out of shape, probably broken. The ginger apologized before helping his friend out of the cage and taking him down the hall, no doubt to get medical assistance. Once again by myself, I was feeling a bit tired of nonstop kicking by now. I took a pause and approached the cage the guys had been fighting in. I moved closer to it, standing on my tiptoes and peering through the mesh. The ridges of this cage were not as nasty as the ones I'd seen the night before in the Brunswick Arena, but they still weren't padded, not something you'd want to fall on. My breathing quickened a touch. I felt the urge to climb inside it, to see what it was really like on the inside. I climbed into the cage, my feet slipping slightly over beads of sweat. I moved around its circumference, running my fingers over the mesh. I imagined what a thrill it must be to enter a cage like this on the night of a fight. To be surrounded by crowds chanting your name. What a rush would come with looking your opponent in the eye and having full freedom to make them submit to you. The pager in the pocket of my jacket, which I had brought in the cage with me over one arm, buzzed again. "Still delayed. We'll keep you posted." Resuming my focus on the room around me, I heard footsteps outside, moving along the corridor. I hurried out of the cage and made my way back to the punching bags as someone entered the room. The same man returned without his injured friend and headed to the same cage they had sparred in. He began throwing air punches, flexing his limbs on his own. He caught me staring at him this time and stopped punching to address me.
"Haven't seen you around here before," he remarked. "You had a good kick going on there."
I felt my cheeks heat. Now was the moment of truth, the moment to put Deep Vox's claims to the test.
"Thanks."
My voice boomed across the hall, a little louder than I had intended.
"Just joined?"
he asked.
"No, actually," I replied. "But I'm considering it."
He tightened his gloves.
"How's your punch?"
I shrugged.
"Want to spar?" he asked. "I've got a fight coming up next week and could really do with a partner."
I glanced down at my watch. There was still time, but seriously? Was I about to say yes? I suppose I could exchange some calculated punches with him, but there was no way I could get hit in the face or start grappling or wrestling with him on the ground. My disguise wouldn't hold up under that sort of strain.
"I'm recovering from an injury myself," I told him. "Lower back. Can't move so fast and can't afford to be knocked down. I'll throw a few punches, as long as it's not near the face."
I didn't sense danger in doing that with this guy. He didn't strike me as the talkative type. The only reason he'd struck up a conversation with me to begin with was because he'd lost his sparring partner. He might not even bother to ask me my name.
Okay, cheers, he replied, holding the door to the cage open for me.
I double-checked the pager one last time to verify no message had arrived from Lee without my noticing. And, since it was still blank, I left it with my jacket at the foot of the cage steps. Then, flexing my wrists, I stepped into the cage. A spare pair of fingerless gloves like this guy's were hanging from a hook. He offered them to me, and I quickly bound them around my knuckles, which were already red and sore from my assaulting the punching bag earlier. Then, knocking my gloves together, I faced him.
"Not gonna take off your shirt?"
he asked. I shook my head. I wasn't planning to roll up my sleeves, either.
"All right, let's box."
We met in the middle, and I realized that he was more or less the same height as me, our arms about the same length. He swung the first blow. I dodged and returned one. We danced around the cage, neither of us connecting much, until I seized a small opening and knocked him, perhaps a little too hard, in the gut. He staggered back, taking a few seconds to recover before we went at it again.
"How did you learn to fight?"
he asked, eyeing my fists with more wariness than a minute ago.
"Self-taught."
I upped my pace, keeping him distracted so he'd stop asking me questions. He caught my shoulder with a right hook, though I was careful to keep my face protected. As our sparring progressed, a realization dawned on me. This fighter and I might just be two people in an empty hall, but the fact that we were man and woman made this moment feel suddenly epic, sweeping, groundbreaking. Nobody in the world might know it, not even my male accomplice, but we were making history. I doubted any man and woman had ever stood on such equal ground before, since time began in Patris and in Matris. The male in front of me was looking me in the eye without prejudice, without bias or discernment, as I was looking at him. The thought filled me with such euphoria that I found myself quite breathless, in a daze, so much so that I almost missed blocking a punch. If only more people could experience this, was all I could think to myself. I didn't want this sparring match to end. I wanted Lee to leave me alone for at least another half hour so that I could continue immersing myself in this feeling. But then, the pager buzzed. I dropped my fists, my heart dropping along with them like a heavyweight.
"I'm sorry,"
I managed, stooping to my jacket and retrieving the device.
"I'm outside," said the message.
I turned back to the fighter, whose name I still hadn't asked, and shook hands with him.
"I've gotta go,"
I said before hurrying out of the room, although a piece of me remained in that ring with him. As I moved along the hallway back toward the reception, my fingers reached up to check that my facial hair was all still in place. Now that hard reality had returned to me, I was afraid that I'd gotten too carried away and all that dancing around might have loosened it. Maybe the mustache was slightly less firm than before, but altogether the hair felt okay. Nothing was going to drop off during the time it took me to return to Lee across the road. As soon as I stepped through the door, I kept my eyes on the ground and hurried forward, not even glancing to the reception desk, though I sensed someone there. I let out an internal sigh of relief as I reached the main exit. Out of view of the receptionist, I threw caution to the wind and raced up the twisting stairs. But as I turned the corner to climb up the final flight, I almost collided with someone. I staggered back too quickly, and before I could find my footing, I tripped down several steps until my back hit the stairwell wall. It was Vigo. Standing in his trench coat and looking more imposing than ever from his elevated position 5 steps above me, he had stopped in his tracks and was gazing down at me. What was he doing here? He couldn't have been here for training. His schedule had made no mention of it. I straightened and averted my eyes to the stairs, attempting to recover and act as though nothing had happened. Indeed, I expected Vigo to also continue descending right past me. But to my horror, he stayed exactly where he was. And when I reached his level, he reached out a hand and gripped my upper arm. I found myself being scrutinized by his hard stare, his face inches away from mine.
Crap. I stopped breathing as his right hand moved to my face. The next thing I knew, I felt a tug on the skin above my upper lip. And then his hand was drawing away again, clasping my fake mustache between his fingers. I swore in my head. What were the odds of me getting caught as I left the building? And by Vigo, of all people! Vigo seemed to have a penchant for turning corners at the most unexpected of moments. His frown deepened.
"Would you like to explain this?"
he asked, his voice dangerously low. Vigo was one man who definitely had no use for deep vox. My mind went into a panic. What do I tell him? My angst was hardly helped by my pager going off again. Lee must be wondering where I was. Damn it! I was so close to Lee, and yet I was stuck. As Vigo's eyes lowered to my beard, I realized there was no point in concealing my identity any longer. He seemed to have already detected that my beard was fake, too. And once that came off, there would be nothing to hide the softness of my jawline. He might even recognize my bare lower face. He'd seen me twice already. As my mind raced for what explanation I could possibly give him, I realized that it ought to just be as close to the truth as possible. That was the best way to lie.
"I'm sorry," I whispered.
"Sorry for what?" his face contorted.
"I'm not a man."
The words sounded weird coming from my deep throat. Glancing nervously up and down the stairwell, I gripped one corner of my beard and stripped it off like a piece of wax. Next, I reached for my wig and unclasped it, letting my long hair fall down my shoulders. All that remained now were my lenses. But Vigo didn't need me to remove those.
"Mrs. Bertrand." "I'm sorry," I repeated, my voice constricted. "I've been having a tough time getting used to the ways of Patris. It's hard never being able to roam by myself. I just wanted a little freedom, to roam the city without my husband holding my hand. My husband approved of this. He thought it would help with the transition."
Vigo's eyes widened.
"He approved of you masquerading as a male and roaming the city by yourself?" "How else do you think I got hold of this costume?" I replied. "He gave it to me."
"But I am not by myself," I added quickly. "My husband has been following me around from a distance to make sure I don't get myself into trouble. He's just on the other street. I can take you to him now if you don't believe me."
"I will have to take you up on that offer," he replied darkly.
Stuffing the facial hair into my right pocket along with my notepad, pager, and pen, I moved past Vigo and hurried up the staircase. My pager buzzed again. Lee was getting nervous.
"That's my husband,"
I explained to Vigo as we surfaced on the road. I pulled out the pager and glimpsed the latest message. Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. I showed it to Vigo, who grunted.
"What were you doing in the gym?"
he asked me.
"Well, I wondered what was in that pretty glass building. I watched some fighters training, roamed around. Fighting isn't a sport, you see, in Matris. I've worked in a bakery all my life, but I always wished I could have become a warden."
Vigo's expression soured. I could practically read his thoughts. "You're not missing much," I imagined him thinking. He made no attempt to hide how much he hated his job. We reached the other side of the road. I led Vigo round a corner until we arrived at the end of the second road, along where I caught sight of Lee waiting. He was standing next to his motorcycle, glancing up and down the street and clutching his pager in his hand.
"There he is," I murmured, pointing to him. "He lost track of me after I went into the building," I explained. "I should have told him I was going inside."
Lee soon noticed us and instantly froze. I imagined him cursing in his head as he hurried forward, closing the gap between us.
"Violet?" he asked, his voice strained with confusion. "What's going on?"
His eyes flitted to Vigo.
"Lee, I'm sorry," I said, moving to him and clutching his arm. "You told me not to wander into any buildings, but I did. The gym on the riverbank."
There were undercurrents of confusion in his eyes, but he was quick to play along. Admirably quick.
Vigo didn't need to say anything. He just stood there glancing from me to Lee in cold disdain.
"Damn it, Vi!" Lee exhaled sharply. "I take risks and go to all this trouble to give you a sense of freedom, and this is how you repay me? Doing the first thing I forbade you to do?" Lee's grip around me tightened. "This will be the last time I trust you."
He turned to Vigo. "I understand, of course, if you need to report us, Vigo. Mark it as an infraction on my name. Even though I was following her, we were stretching the rules. No doubt about it. But I do promise you this will not happen again. We've just been having a difficult time with her adjustment. I hoped keeping her on a longer leash would help us make things work."
I prayed that would get to Vigo. If it didn't, I didn't know what would. He had experienced firsthand the difficulties of a patress-matress marriage, with his own wife struggling with the constraints patress's laws put upon its female residents. I hoped there was a place of compassion within his heart that he would draw on to not judge us so harshly. Vigo's gaze remained sharp as it continued to roam my face, but then his jaw clenched, resoluteness setting in.
"I'll let you off this time, since you were nearby. But if I do witness it again, I'm sure you understand I can't be so lenient."
He cleared his throat and averted his eyes, settling them on some distant point at the end of the road.
"As you know, here in Patress, rules are rules."
Chapter 17. After Vigo strode away, both Lee and I let out a long, slow sigh.
"God," he muttered, turning his back on the warden and rubbing his face in his hands.
"That was not something I ever want to repeat," he glanced at me. "What on earth happened?"
My relief gave way to mild irritation.
"What happened to you? What took you so long?"
"I had to go pick something up." He gave me a meaningful look. I guessed that meant more explosives or some kind of other equipment necessary for our mission.
"But things got delayed. How did you wind up with Vigo?"
"I was hanging around the gym," I began. I decided to omit the little sparring match I'd had. I didn't see the point in mentioning it. It would only make him more nervous.
"I tried to keep myself away from the reception area to avoid awkward questions. I ended up roaming around the training halls. When I finally got your text and was making my way back up to the street, I bumped into Vigo. Like, literally bumped into him. My mustache got knocked off and he noticed. I figured it was best to just come clean after that. As clean as I could."
Lee nodded as he raised the seat of the motorcycle and pulled out our helmets. "You did the right thing. It's likely he's seen this trick played before. I'm certain we're not the first couple to think of it." I found the idea quite revolutionary as we mounted the motorcycle and Lee kicked us off down the street. That this could be an old trick played by women who found themselves in Patress but wanted more freedom hadn't occurred to me. Where had Lee actually gotten such a realistic costume? Had he really made it all himself, or had he purchased it? I guess there must be some kind of underground market for them, and I wondered how many women I'd mistaken for men since arriving here in Patress, especially at night, when streets were packed and it was far easier to go unnoticed. Maybe some Patrian females aren't all that different from Matrian ones after all. Maybe others, too, have experienced the rush I did back in that gym. As we traveled back through the city toward the mountains, I found myself eyeing everyone on the sidewalks, examining the faces of the men and trying to spot any slight hint of femininity. But then Lee started traveling too quickly, and I could no longer continue with that game.
"Anyway, none of this is the end of the world," Lee said as we entered the house. "In fact, we could twist this to our advantage." "What are you thinking?" I asked, removing my shoes at the doorway.
We entered the kitchen and sat down around the table. "Where's your notebook?" he asked.
"Here,"
I said, digging a hand into my jacket pocket and handing it to him. Lee stroked his jaw as he paged through it, leaning back in his chair.
Okay.
Interesting. And good. So far he has nothing booked the night of the banquet. As you know, we can't have him having an alibi that evening.
How do we turn my collision with Vigo today into an advantage?
I asked again. Well, I was actually surprised that Vigo was so lenient with me. He isn't the type to dish out leniencies. Lee paused, glancing up from the notebook. As hardened as he seems on the outside, he obviously does have weaknesses. I think he has a thing for Matrian girls.
Well, he married one, so I guess he'd have to.
Lee sat forward. I think our strategy from now on, at least in regards to you, has become a lot simpler.
What do you mean?
This further development of rapport between the two of you, shall we say, could be used to bridge the gap between him and us more.
Bridge the gap? Why would we?
We need to find a way for you to keep him isolated on the night of the banquet. To keep him away from anyone else's eye. In order to do that, you're going to have to make him go somewhere. Don't ask me where yet. That's something we'll have to figure out. But for any of this to happen, he's going to need to trust you. Gain his trust, and we have more control over him when the night arrives. I lowered my brows at Lee. I would hardly describe what had happened today as further development of rapport. Of course, another thing that works to our advantage in all this, Lee went on, is that he needs money. That's the reason he fights in the first place. It pays well compared to other jobs. I crossed my arms over my chest, waiting for him to tie all his threads together. He stood up and moved to the kitchen counter. Planting his palms down on the surface, he turned his back on me. He fell quiet for about a minute before drawing in a thoughtful breath and turning round again. His blue eyes rested on mine with a gleam of optimism, enthusiasm almost, before he said, "Let's meet Vigo again tonight. I have a proposal to discuss with him." Chapter 18. After Lee revealed his plan to me, we spent the rest of the day at home, monitoring Vigo's movements. According to the gym schedule, he wasn't due to visit the gym tonight, nor did he have any fights going on. Which meant he would, in all likelihood, head straight home after work. As evening came around, we watched his red, flashing dot make its way toward the mountains, straight from the city center. Once he'd entered the foothills, Lee was confident enough about his direction for us to leave ourselves. I didn't need to wear a suit this time. We rode out of the driveway on Lee's motorcycle. But instead of taking the usual route down to the city, we headed further upward, higher into the peaks. It got chillier as we ascended, and I found myself grateful Lee had suggested I wear a jacket. It was silent up here, too. And soon we came to the end of the residential area and entered a long, deserted stretch of winding road that led us northward toward Vigo's territory. It was a pity that the sun had gone down. As the verdant landscape sped away on either side of us, I imagine this place would have looked stunning during the day, with brooks bubbling beneath bridges, lots of trees. We reached an open plateau, allowing us an unrivaled view of Patras beneath us. It was a fairly clear night, and beyond the glittering sprawl of Patras City, I could make out the deep black stretch that was the river, and then beyond, the hazy glow of Matris's borders. I couldn't say that the sight made me feel homesick. Anxious to get back because of the prize that awaited me, but not homesick. Lee thundered the motorbike forward at a speed that made me nervous.
"How much longer?"
I asked him. My deep voice hadn't worn off yet.
"Maybe 10 minutes."
10 minutes proved to be about accurate. A bungalow, which was really not much more than a glorified log cabin,
came into view at the end of a dirt track. A familiar beetle-black motorcycle was parked outside its porch, next to a three-wheeled trailer that I guessed he used to transport larger objects. The building looked like only a one-bedroom, with perhaps enough space for a small living room, a kitchen, and a bathroom. The large square windows were closed off by shutters, though a spill of warm light glowed through their cracks. As Lee killed the engine and we got off the motorbike, we stood in silence for a few seconds, taking in the peaceful atmosphere. It was like another world up here. The middle of nowhere. The closest houses were settled nearer to the foothills, miles beneath us by road. Lee reached for my hand, giving me a reassuring squeeze before the two of us approached the front door. Lee knocked three times, and my stomach clenched as I caught the sound of a door clicking, then heavy footsteps moving toward us. A bolt was drawn, and then the front door creaked open. My lips unconsciously parted as Vigo towered before us in the doorway, bare-chested. He wore a pair of loose black pants, and clutched in one hand was a roll of cotton wool, and the other, some kind of medicated ointment. His bare knuckles were red and glistening.
"Mr. Bertrand?" Vigo said, his eyes widening as they swept from him to me.
"Vigo," Lee replied calmly, "I do apologize for intruding like this. I won't take up much of your time, but I would like to speak to you about something."
Vigo paused, still frowning, before allowing us inside. We stepped into a narrow hallway lit by a hanging gas lamp, its walls and ceilings made of logs. A rough wicker carpet lined the floor, and the hallway opened up to four different rooms. Vigo led us through the first door to our left, into a sitting room. A fire crackled in the hearth, and before it sat one sturdy armchair. That was the only piece of furniture in the room, save for a low table upon which sat a metal jug and a damp cloth. Vigo set down his bandages and ointment on the table. He grabbed a shirt which hung at the back of his armchair, and pulled it on before turning back round to face us.
"It's about Violet," Lee said, his arm moving to my waist. "We're trying to figure out how to make things work in the long term. As you noted, she has an adventurous mind. Even though her work was domestic, she still, of course, has the spirit of any Matrian woman. My days will become much busier soon. I will have to return to work, and I will not have time to accompany her places. But our meeting earlier got me thinking, and I have come to you with a proposal."
Vigo's gaze froze on Lee, his right brow lifting.
"You spend the most part of every day in the city," Lee said. "I would like to appoint you as Violet's second guardian, and have her accompany you for at least a few hours every day, when it's convenient. It will get her out of the house on a regular basis, and I would pay you, naturally, for the service."
Whatever Vigo might have been expecting Lee to say, it sure wasn't that.
"What do you mean, accompany me?"
"It means just that," Lee replied. "Let her walk with you. Be your shadow. It will allow her to explore the city, as she's itching to do, and gain a greater understanding of our culture and residents."
"In other words, it'll be like walking a dog." As my husband Lee had full right to appoint guardianship of me to any other man, with or without my consent. Vigo's green eyes rested on me, his expression serious. At least he appeared to be considering the proposal.
"I'm not sure this would be approved by head office," he said.
"I doubt you'll have trouble," Lee said. "It's not breaking any laws to bring a girl with you to work."
"Hmm. How many hours exactly?" Vigo asked, resuming his focus on Lee. Lee shrugged.
"It can vary. I'm sure we could come to an understanding. Though it would make sense if she came into the city with me in the morning, for work. I could bring her to you, and then either you could drop her back home during lunch break, or you could bring her back to the lab, and I could drive her home with me at the end of the day. Whatever works, I'm flexible. As for payment," Lee went on, I'll pay you the same hourly rate you ought to be receiving as an inner-city warden. Just keep a tally of the hours and let me know. That ought to be an attractive proposition.